Blog Talk Radio.
You gotta love this, Lucas. Who wants the ring? Flashbulb, sparkle, we are underway.
Cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it. I want winners.
The new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks. Breaks the bar held by Mark Gatto.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in.
Too much to get to, so I cut the intro in half. Welcome to this week's installment of New York Sports 30. It's NBA All-Star Weekend in the big city, and we just found out today that Carmelo Anthony will be taking part in the game on Sunday. I wish he wouldn't, and I wish the choice wasn't up to him. I was thinking about sending James Dolan an email, but I'm a little bit afraid of his response. If he calls a 60-something-year-old lifelong Knicks fan an alcoholic and a hateful mess, what's he going to say to a 20-something punk like your boy when he hears what I have to say to him? You already know what it is. It's New York Sports 30. Cool. Talking sports in Gotham. That's what we do, and that's what we'll be bringing you for the next half hour. I'll be joined by a couple of colleagues today. First, it'll be my regular co-host, Aaron Jacob, who I always enjoy doing the show with. We're going to cover the NBA and a little NFL issue that's bothered me this week. A little later, I'll be joined by another colleague of ours from up in Ontario, where hockey's in the blood, eh? That was a pretty bad Canadian accent, but it doesn't matter. You know what? I'm going to bring on my boy Aaron, and we're going to jump on right with the Knicks. Aaron, what's good, man? How you doing?
What's going on, man? How are you?
I'm well. What was your initial reaction to that irresponsible email from James Dolan? I just chuckled a little and shook my head.
I mean, same thing. I chuckled. I mean, what else can you really do? What do you expect from a billionaire who's been handed everything his entire life? I mean, this is the way the guy feels, and this is how he acts. He acts like a 10-year-old. So.
It's true. I guess it defies the law of the customer's always right if you just have billions of dollars and don't think you need the customer. F the customer.
Exactly.
You know, it's so, because that's like the thing, right, when you run a business, is that the customer's always right. You know, you call the waiter over and say the food is too cold. They'll say, I'll fix that for you, and they don't charge you any extra. So you get an email from a fan who just, he later said, I don't want an apology, I just want a championship, and that's really how we all feel. But Aaron, we can't be that surprised by James Dolan. This is just confirmation of him being the guy we already knew, isn't it?
Absolutely not. I mean, listen, us 20-year-olds felt the same way that 60-year-old has felt, except he's had to endure it for a longer period of time. I would love for James Dolan to sell this team. We all know it's not going to happen, but we would love for him to get rid of this team or just back off, hands off, because you don't know anything about basketball, and just leave it alone. Let the experts deal with it. But you know, that'll never happen because James Dolan is a lot of words I can't say.
because when you're it's different when the Jet fans are flying banners around because they want John Idzik fired, because that guy's the GM. He's replaceable in the sense where he doesn't own the team. If you were going to fly banners around asking for Woody Johnson to be fired, that would have been, you know, fruitless as well. Here's the analogy I was telling you about off air. James Dolan woke up on third base but could have sworn he hit a triple. You know, he's just,
that's
like,
the greatest
he
way to
handed
describe
it. That's how exactly what you said. I was handed to him. You know, I don't know. But I will say this for him. For just about this entire year, since Phil Jackson's been on board, he has been hands-off. And as far as this email goes, this is just how the guy does business. This is why I'd never do business with him. And this is why he's, you know, probably the most hated owner in, I don't know, in sports by maybe his own fan base. Maybe not by other fan bases, but his own fan base knows just how terrible he is. But I'm going to move on to Carmelo Anthony, who is... I've always been a big Melo fan, even before I came to the Knicks. I still love Melo. I stick up for him in almost every situation. Not today.
Because we spoke about this a month ago
about how what's going to happen? Well, he's going to make it to the All-Star break and then shut it down right after. Me and you spoke about it. Everyone's kind of getting enraged now as it happens. I'm not so enraged because I knew it was going to happen. But tell me, Aaron, how much of a bad look, how bad is the optic that Melo gets hurt, but he just has to play in the All-Star game?
Oh, it's foolish. He looks very, very foolish. And I consider Carmelo Anthony to be a smart businessman because you can see just outside of basketball how smart he is. But this was just – I understand wanting to play at home, the All-Star games at home. It's in your backyard. It's in Gotham City. I get it. You want to play in front of the fans. But at the end of the day, there's 124 million reasons to not play in this game over the course of the next 4 years. So I'm sorry. If something happens to Carmelo Anthony at the All-Star game, which it probably won't considering how much of a, you know, NFL Pro Bowl-like atmosphere it is for the NBA. But, you know, so highly unlikely. But if anything does happen, he just looks foolish, completely foolish.
Yeah, he's trying to have his cake and eat it too because, you know, the surgery is only going to be a couple months to rehab and he'll still be ready for next year. And what this is really seems like it's about is his branding. He's so obsessed with being a star off, you know, the court. He thinks he's some kind of ambassador to the game, and he is one of the game stars, but he comes back just in time to play in London because he was the player marketed in England. He comes back, you know, he's going to play in the All-Star game, but I don't mind him not playing in the Knicks games. It's just a point that he's putting the branding, Carmelo Anthony, the name, ahead of the New York Knicks in this situation. And that's what really irks me because, as you said, there's 4 years and 100 million reasons why, you know, the Knicks have to come first. And, you know, I see that it doesn't really matter. It doesn't affect the Knicks for the rest of the season. They're not making the playoffs. He's going to shut it down. He's not going to get hurt in the All-Star game, I would assume. I guess stranger things have happened. But, you know, the point really is that Melo becomes indefensible. You can't defend Melo on this one. You just can't, can you?
No, there's no way you can defend him. I mean, he is putting himself before the team. And I'm sorry, and I understand wanting to play because, you know, you got the team in front of you. This team was out months ago. They were done. It was finished. You traded away two guys who you thought were pieces and weren't. And guess what? So now Carmelo Anthony should have shut it down since that knee started giving him problems. And instead, I get it, being the hero, trying to play. You want to maybe get your team back in. You play in the weaker conference. But regardless, he just there's no way to defend him in wanting to play right now, especially over the course of the last 4 years. We've seen too many superstars go from straight up like superstar level to decrepit comeback king that never works out. And, you know, he just, like I said, he's got to be shut down. That's it.
So now shifting towards what's actually happening, because I'll just watch that game and just pray he doesn't get hurt. But basically, here we go. Here's a little rapid fire. What's your favorite event on NBA Saturday night?
Oh, man. For a long time, it was a dunk contest, especially growing up.
Yeah,
right,
let
me tell you something, though. This year's three-point shootout looked
yes.
like it could be one of the best ones in the history of the game. I mean, Curry.
I agree.
Curry.
Thompson.
Thompson. Freaking Korver. So many
yeah.
greats, Bellinelli, all these guys. I mean, this is going to be a ridiculous three-point contest, so I'm definitely looking forward to that this year.
Yeah, I'll probably watch everything up until that and always tell myself, oh, I'll turn it off because I don't care about the, like, you know, the dunk contest. But if I'm, you know, well, if I'm going to, you know, watch something else, do something with my girlfriend, maybe I actually won't watch the dunk part. I usually end up doing it anyway. But that three-point shootout is absolutely the event I'm looking forward to. And what I hope happens is the Splash Brothers shoot against each other in the finals. I think that'd be fantastic.
That'd be the best storyline.
Now, we talked about this, you know, off air a little bit. I don't. It's really a sidebar, and it's not that big of a deal, and I want to get your thoughts about it. Obviously, three out of the five West starters aren't playing, and so these guys have been filling in, getting on the team. Damian Lillard cried and whined and posted letters, and they finally got into the game. And all I'm really going to say about it is this. He's a deserving player, but the whining, you know, bothers me because he looks like a sore loser. You know, he said that he was going to use it as motivation. You want motivation? People laughed at the idea of someone coming from Weber State and making an impact in the NBA, and that's what he's doing. I don't want to hear any BS that fans and coaches and the commissioner doesn't believe in him and that's your fuel. that's your fuel, that is who are you going to go in the game ahead of? Russell Westbrook? Chris Paul got voted in. So what guard has Damian Lillard proven, you know, more than he should, you know, get in the game over? I guess it's arguable if you're going by pure stats, but the All-Star game is a fan thing. I maybe would have put him in over Westbrook this year, but what's he thinking? Is it only me?
No, just based on stats. Stats alone, I think Lillard maybe should have gotten the nod ahead of Westbrook, but that's really, I mean, that's typical
right
here.
Right, agreed.
You're kind of, you know, both of those guys are great, but, I mean, it's not Damian Lillard's fault that the West is stacked at the point guard position. I mean, you know, but the fact of the matter is he does look like a crybaby in this situation, and it's not a good look for him, honestly. He's a young player. He's an up-and-coming player. He's going to be great in the league for many years, and, you know, there's going to be so many All-Star games for this kid. I didn't think it was necessary to, you know, all the extra theatrics just to try and get yourself in. Doesn't look good for you as a brand.
No, absolutely. All right, so this is the last thing that we got. The time really does go fast. Now, I've made it a point. It's just one thing about the NFL. We obviously made a deal about Deflategate because, you know, the Patriots, you know, record of bending the rules. But, you know, we find out the Atlanta Falcons are pumping crowd noise, and the Browns' general manager is sending text messages from the sidelines, and Jerry Rice is admitting to use stickum on his hands when it was illegal. We don't care about the Falcons because it didn't work. Same with the Browns. And we don't care about Jerry Rice because he's likable and the best wide receiver ever. Well, to be fair, even though we're Jet fans, Aaron, Tom Brady might be the best quarterback ever. So if stickum didn't help Rice, we can say that the deflated balls didn't really help Brady. The difference to me, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about it before we let you go here, you know, the Pats aren't likable, and they're easy, you know, to hate. Now, for me, if you were outraged about the Deflategate, it should outrage you that the Atlanta Falcons pumped fake crowd noise and that the Browns text message from the press box to the sidelines. Why is it that, you know, likability and winning fuels all of the extra hatred for fans?
Well, I mean, it's the NFL. It's the most widely watched sport in the United States, and I just think it has to do with the fact that it's a thing. Like, you know, if the Cowboys or the Patriots or teams like that, if you don't like those teams, you're going to look for any reason to pick on them, and I just think it's a fan thing. But personally speaking, I think you're right. I think, you know, pumping crowd noise is cheating, and, you know, for Jerry Rice using stickum, okay, fine. It wasn't going to make him not run any great routes and not catch any balls over anybody. Let's put it that way, okay? And the Atlanta Falcons pumping crowd noise in, they went 6-9 during that time period. So does that really work for them? And I've heard the best analogy about the Browns. They can't even cheat right. So it's just, you know, none of those things impacted the game. And listen, Deflategate, whatever you want to call it, I hate the gates, I'm done with it. But Deflategate didn't have an impact on that game. They were going to win regardless.
No.
They just might not have won by as many touchdowns as they did. And Tom Brady might be one of the best quarterbacks of all time, as much as that really hurts me to say. I think I just got some freaking acid buildup in my stomach from saying that. But
Well, it's just that it seems that, you know, we hate the Patriots more because they won. If the Patriots were to inflate the balls and go 4-12 the way that, you know, the Browns did, I'm just saying we wouldn't give a crap.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. Why would we?
So
because
it's
easy to pick
on
the Patriots.
If someone's, you know, some people say that if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. So maybe the Patriots are just trying the hardest.
That's it. And they got the results to show for it. How many winning seasons later?
No, they did.
I mean,
Aaron, this goes by too fast, but next week we'll be back on our normal time slot.
That's it. I hear you. Listen, talk some Islanders. I was at the Islander game the other night. Let's go, Isles.
Oh, I was too. There we go. Perfect. And as we let Aaron go, bro, and I always appreciate having him on, I'm going to bring on the hockey analyst, the guy who's got it in his blood, someone I speak to on social media who I'm actually very excited to talk to now, Steven Nixon, NHL analyst at H4. What's going on, brother?
Not much, buddy. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man. I appreciate you coming on, man. It's not so often where I have somebody to talk hockey with, and, you know, my girlfriend doesn't answer me back when I talk about it. She just sort of nods. And that's you know, really it. Now, Nixon's from Ontario, and if I got this right, what is that, Springwater Township?
That's where I was born. Yeah, I live in Toronto.
So you were born? Oh, you live in Toronto.
Yeah.
Oh man, but Springwater Township over there by the Nottawasaga.
Yeah, pretty close, right near the Nottawasaga.
Not
actually.
That
far. Yeah, you got that.
You know
right.
What? You know what's funny is that I just know a little bit about the geography, so I'm a jerk. Sorry. I've only been to Canada once. It was a great weekend. I was in Montreal. Actually, the Habs were in the playoffs, and I really wanted to go to Centre Bell, but they were playing a road game. So that's the best I could do. Now, if you don't mind me asking, now who are you a fan of?
I'm a Leafs fan, diehard Leafs fan.
All right, you're a Leafs fan. You've had a little bit of a rough season.
A little bit rough.
Speaking in terms of all the teams I root for are miserable failures. And
right.
The Leafs are just like, you know, a little bit below 500 in Toronto and in Montreal. I know it's a huge deal. And with the Habs being good and the Leafs not being so great, you know, it's I know that's tough for you. I can really only imagine. But I'm telling you, I bleed hockey as much as an American possibly could. Now this is New York, and we have, you know, two good hockey teams in this town. And it's interesting that the Leafs, the good Go Leafs Go, happen to be playing the Islanders tonight. I'm going to start with the Rangers here for a second. It's really the first thing I want to ask you that. It's no secret, you know, losing Henrik Lundqvist is a blow that few teams, if any, could sustain. Life without Lundqvist is tough, but they're hanging in. How do you see the Rangers shaping up in this playoff race going without Lundqvist for maybe the next until the month end?
Well, to be honest, even though they're without Hank right now, I still think they're going to be pretty decent. Their schedule, I think they play Arizona twice and then Buffalo and Columbus. So, I mean, for the next 3 weeks here, it's not like the crazy hard schedule. As a team that scores like 3 goals a game, I think they're like fourth or fifth in the league in scoring. As long as they can keep that up, they're not going to have a problem at least staying around 500. And in the East, in my opinion, the East is pretty much locked down 1-8. So as long as they stick to 500, they're going to be fine regardless whenever Hank comes back. Because
yeah,
I mean, with
you're right, Nick.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's right. No, I'm sorry. No, because I thought that you said something. You were exactly on point. You said about the Rangers schedule. You know, the 9 games that end February, only 2 of those teams are in playoff spots right now. So I guess if you were going to pick a month not to have Hank in, you know, this would be the month. But I think you're right about the East being locked down, not just 1-8, but I think it's going to be 4-4. But what the Rangers are trying to avoid is obviously ending up being one of the wild cards and having to play, you know, if you end up a wild card, you're going to end up, you know, obviously you end up playing in one of the 1 seeds. It's and that's what they would, you know, like to avoid. But I'm going to shift over on down to the Islanders, who maybe is the most – one of the more surprising teams in the league. You know, I thought they'd be better, but maybe not quite this good. They're in a little bit of unfamiliar territory at the top of the league, but they're proving their consistency and they're proving their worth. How for real do you think the Islanders are?
To be honest, as much as I would like to think they're for real right now, they're 7-1 in the shootouts this year. So, I mean, you can't play the shootout in the playoffs. So,
nah, the extra point.
Yeah, they're getting pretty lucky there. They're a good team. Like, they can score all 4 lines. They're playing pretty well with Halak and Net, and I really like their decor there when they brought in Letty and Boychuk this year. But, I mean, that first-round playoff, no matter what, whoever they play, it's going to be a tough series. Even against, like, right now, they'd be playing, like, Washington. I don't even know if they get past Washington to the first round in 7 games. I mean, for Islanders fans, obviously they want to be able to lock down a solid playoff run there with in their last year at NASA Coliseum. But I don't know. I don't think I really don't think they go that far. I think they're a solid team. It's a good story right now, but I just can't see them really making it past even past the second round for sure. Even past the first round, I don't know if they can do it this year.
Oh, well, you know what, and no one will fault you for feeling that way, you know, because, you know, we are talking about, obviously, this team hasn't won, you know, they haven't won a playoff series since 1993, so we're not going to act like anything to guarantee. Something that I did think is that 2 years ago in 2012, they lost in the first round series in 6 games to Pittsburgh. I actually thought they outplayed the Penguins, and maybe they grew up a little bit from that. And, you know, as you said about Halak, you know, that's a huge addition that, you know, their GM Gart Snow had to make. The two guys on the back end, Letty and Boychuk, and then bringing in the goaltender. Nobody wins the cup without the goaltender. Nobody
right.
does it. And, you know, right. but you're right about the end of games. You know, there's a reason why we don't play the shootout. We don't play a 5-minute overtimes in the you know, in the playoffs, and they have been good at getting that extra point, and I guess you use the rules to your advantage, and they've used that to get the extra point, put themselves in good position. I, for one, find the shootout to be a complete farce.
Yep.
Because, and,
yeah,
you
I
know,
agree with
of
you,
course,
sure.
I would rather see ties, but the shootout was put in there for the casual fan, not for the diehard fan.
Exactly.
You know, so
exactly.
But
yeah.
You know, here's some, yeah. No, go ahead, Nixon.
Yeah, just going back to your point there with the 2012 playoffs, like I remember that series against Pittsburgh. They played really good. Like, it was a solid series. But you're probably right with those players growing up. I mean, their team's a little different, obviously, since then, but there's still that key core there. Whenever you have a leader like Jonathan or Johnny Tavares leading up the middle, you're going to be good. But, again, it's just that the Metropolitan divisions, it's just tough. I don't know if I just don't see him really going that far, unfortunately, for Islanders fans this year.
Well, there's going to be somebody. You know, there's going to be a first round where two of those teams are knocked out. You know, they're two good teams. There are eight, you know, pretty good hockey teams that play in the East. So you're right about that. I do want to ask you about this about the format, about the way the playoff format works, and this is the second year of a 3-year trial where we're seeing the second and third place in each division play each other. First place plays one of the wild cards. But I guess if you're playing teams in your division, it's going to further promote those rivalries that you have within the division, and it keeps, I guess, most of the travel pretty close. But how do you feel about it not going just 1-8 and having these sort of set matchups ready to go?
I mean, going back to your point there, before it would be a huge advantage, obviously, if you were the number one seed, because you for sure would be playing the bottom team in your division, right? So, I mean, right now, if you look at that, like Tampa Bay versus Detroit right now, Tampa Bay would be in a much better position if they were to play like Washington, statistically
yeah,
speaking.
Right.
But at the same time, I do like it, actually. If I could see a Boston-Montreal series again, or even a New York-New York matchup, something like that, I mean, just being able to see those teams play each other in the playoffs is just that much better. I just like the aspect of being able to build those rivalries. So,
you know, I completely agree with what you're saying, and I want to even take it a step further with those rivalries is that I'll you know, I am a Lightning fan. I like Tampa. And something that I thought was great, even though they got swept by the Habs, which, you know, I guess me and you both hated last year, something that I liked is that, you know, you have your classic, you know, original six rivalries and rivalries of teams that play in the same division. But, you know, with the exception of maybe the Sharks and the Kings, I can't think of, you know, warm weather climate teams that have been playing in a bit of a rinky-dink division for a few years until they realigned them, having a real rivalry with a you know, with an original six power and a perennial playoff contender. And I like the idea that a team like the Lightning and the Canadiens could play each other and almost form a rivalry if they play each other, you know, a few years in a row in the playoffs or something like that. It extends old rivalries, as you were saying, and sort of can kind of make new ones, and I would say that I like that as well.
I absolutely agree with that. Like, with Tampa Bay and Montreal playing each other last year, if they were able to play each other again this year in the playoffs, total redemption there. I mean, hopefully Ben Bishop's healthy, that they can play each other in the playoffs.
I know,
make it a little
I know.
Different, right? So that's all really where it matters.
Forget it. So, you know, if we were playing a quick game now, we never get to everything, and I promise me and you will speak Yankees before the baseball season starts. We have a little bit of time before spring training here, but I want to play a little game of contenders or pretenders with you. Now, really, when it comes to the Western Conference, I really find that the top five teams in the West are all pretty much contenders. At least in, you know, in my opinion, when you look at Anaheim and St. Louis and Chicago, you know, they're Nashville, obviously, they're in first. Those teams, I think, are are all contenders for the Cup? Do you think that there's one that maybe isn't, and those Western Conference teams? Because from Nashville, Anaheim, St. Louis, Chicago, and actually, I don't even want to say San Jose because they haven't proven they can do it. Those top four teams, you fear those.
The
teams.
Only one I fear probably three of those four teams. The only one I'd be like kind of on the fence about would probably be Anaheim. Anaheim,
okay.
I mean, they're a solid team everywhere, but it's
the
just that goaltending position. It's the goal,
there
exactly, right? So that's the only thing that worries me. I mean, if Anderson can be healthy and play well in the playoffs, they can go anywhere. But until I see something out of him, like, they got a pretty young goaltending tandem there, so it's gonna be tough for them to get out of that division.
Yeah, it's really a dog fighting, you know, in both ends. But I guess what I'm even more curious about is, I know you said what you had to say about the Islanders, and I can't wholeheartedly disagree with you. But now, when you look at the Habs, and when you look at Detroit, and you look at Tampa Bay, and even you go down to Pittsburgh, Washington, the Rangers, who in your mind you think are the most dangerous, say, two teams in the Eastern Conference?
Probably, as hard as it is for me to say this, I'm going to say Montreal. And
you're right. I can't disagree.
I just, Carey Price is just too good.
He's
like
fantastic.
He can win the series. He can go a full series without allowing a goal, probably. That guy is just phenomenal. Sawyer, go ahead.
You think? No. I actually wanted to just add to that. Now, don't you think now, especially the way Price got hurt game one against the Rangers last year, that Montreal really, they feel like they have a score to set?
Absolutely. I feel the exact same way that, like, I think.
And Tampa, what do you think? Tell me the Lightning. Tell me.
I am a heavy supporter of the Lightning. As long as, I mean, last year they should have been there if it wasn't for Bishop, I think. And that offense is killer.
Yeah, Bishop's
Johnson
hurt.
And
well,
Stamkos.
Bishop was hurt. I'm a little bit worried about the injuries to Matt Carl and Radko Gudas. You know, you lose two top six defensemen and you struggle in that category. But Tampa Bay, they can score goals with anybody. And
exactly.
You know, I guess. And so I guess that gives me a little bit of confidence. But give me a final four Eastern Conference and Western Conference finals. Who do you got right now?
Right now, I'm gonna say Montreal and Tampa Bay there, I guess, for the, actually no, that won't work. Sorry. I'm gonna say Montreal and man, this is tough. I'm gonna say the Rangers.
See, because
and,
all right, there you go. So the Rangers make the run again. I got it.
Yeah.
In the West?
Yeah. Once Hank comes back, and then I'm gonna have to go with St. Louis and San Jose, I guess. I don't know. I can't.
You know, San Jose San Jose
is
one of these teams that's won the President's Trophy. They've finished in first place. They've blown 3-0 series leads. As soon as they get to the playoffs, it seems like they really collapse.
I might even go off the radar and say somebody like the Kings make a run again. But
well, you know
I
what?
Mean,
they made a run from the eight, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they won the Cup
so,
as an eighth seed, so I mean anything can happen. But that's it's a tough spot to be in there. It's open for anyone, I think. So
you know
that
what,
West
Nixon, go ahead, please say before we close down.
Sorry, just that Western Conference is just so good. It's hard to pick one team to come out.
If Pekka Rinne, if Pekka's on his game, I still say Nashville can make it to the Cup.
I agree with you there. That guy's a stud.
No, it's true. But look, Nixon, we have to, as this playoff race winds down, we have to talk some more hockey. We've got to talk some more baseball. I greatly appreciate you coming on with me today. It's great to have a great hockey mind on our website, and I'm happy about it. So we'll talk soon. All right.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. That's Steven Nixon, NHL analyst with H4. I ran out of all my time because between our two guests, we jam-packed everything we could in there, and you just learned more about hockey in about 15 minutes from Steven Nixon than you could have from me or anybody else in, you know, in a couple hours. That's how you get your knowledge down. That's it for this week. Next week, Thursday, New York Sports 30. Be there. We out.